So do you guys sing that bhajan here ever? Does anyone ever sing it here? I never hear it sung anywhere. You sing it? Great. Tell her when you see her next, tell her it's my favorite. One of my, I've got a couple of favorites, but is she? Well, I don't know why, I just have always liked the Sarvadharma bhajans. And I do remember when Swami announced, I suppose it was about 5 years ago, he'd said to his boys, unless you put a Sarvadharma bhajan in every bhajan session, then I'm stopping all bhajans. Of course, from that moment on, every boy at Swami's school put lots of Sarvadharma in. And now we get lots of qawwalis too, which I'm extremely pleased about. I shall tell you funny little stories maybe that have happened, you know, because as I said yesterday, I've always been a bit like a blundering fool. I never knew quite what I was doing and how to be when I was at Puttaparthi, and I was rebellious to the end. I refused to get into a sari. I liked to be in shalwar kameez with a dupatta, and that always meant that I was in serious danger of being highly unsuitable when singing, because you can't be going like this and things start sliding off. And Swami used to come backstage, or what I'd call the back performance area, always to check that I was pinned correctly. Very often he did this, because I know, you know how correct he is. I remember once, years ago, doing a sort of thing when there were Argentinians doing something as well. It was a multicultural thing a long time ago in the Punachandra Hall. And the women were wearing ponchos that went down to here. And Swami watched the rehearsals, and at one point, the women go like this, and their poncho rose up to show about that much of waist. And immediately he said, no, no, that's not on. And so they all had to have this much put on the bottom of their poncho. So I was always aware that I was in a potential dangerous area because of my not being quite conventional. And then one time he gave me 8 saris in 1 week. And I felt this was a little bit of a hint, time for get this woman looking a bit more elegant. And now, of course, I love being in a sari. I wouldn't even dream of not being, obviously not here. And I don't even keep my saris in England. Somehow I'd feel very awkward wearing it in England. It doesn't work, but it definitely works over there. And one of the funny things about giving me all these saris, some of the saris, or about 3 of them, I think, were given. There's a little room, you men don't see this, but in Puttaparthi there was a little room round the side where tiffin used to be bought in. Do you know the room I'm talking about? I always used to wonder what on earth went on in that room. Have any of you ever been in there? Well, I have. One day he called me to come in there. I mean, I went in with a friend, obviously one had to go correctly with 2. So I got in there, and it's where his food would be delivered, and there was a table laid out, plastic knife and the plastic plate and knife. I think he used to eat his food there. So I was called in there, and he fiddled around and came out with some saris. But he had, first of all, he gave me a sari that was amazing rainbow colors and gold, golden color. He handed it to me, and it was so heavy, I dropped it instantly. And our beloved Lord was down and picked it up before I could even think in my head to pick it up. And as he handed it to me, I knew that he wanted me to wear it for the 80th birthday. This was about 7 years before the 80th. But I had this, sometimes you kind of know things. I knew this was to be reserved for the 80th. So I never put it on until the 80th. And for the 80th birthday, were some of you in the stadium for the 80th? Some of you were. Well, I probably don't need to tell you that it was an extremely long day and pretty cold and miserable and drizzling and pretty awful weather. And so cold that my mother, who was there aged 82, got flu, and it took her weeks to get over it. Anyway, I was so grateful that I had this sari, because I'd been saying to the organizers, who'll be nameless actually, I kept saying, you must put up a shamiana tent over the musicians, because I know it's going to rain. And they said, no, it'd be ridiculous, it's not going to rain. And I think they were thinking about how it was at the 75th birthday, when I had been there and backstage just before the concert was due to start, and big, heavy, pendulous clouds were coming, heading this way. And Swami comes out and he says, what do you think of the weather, looking up at the clouds? And I said, well, Swami, I'm from London, it rains all the time, so I'm kind of used to it. And he goes, He sort of looks at them, and then he walks off. Then I look 5 minutes later, and those clouds were just heading back from whence they had came. The Swami had given them marching orders, and it didn't rain. And I really think the people thought it's going to be like that for the 80th. But I knew it wasn't going to be. I don't know how I knew, but I just knew. So I begged, I pleaded for 2 days. And, of course, on the day, it was drizzling and awful. Not for myself. I don't care getting wet. But you've got musicians, you know, you can't have electronic musician instruments going up in smoke, and people's tablas and things, you know, can't have a musician in the rain. So finally they said, okay, we'll put a tent up. And they put a shamiana tent, which is fine if you're a musician who plays sitting down. But I can't sit. I have to stand. So finally, when I came out to sing at the 80th birthday in this amazing sari, I mean, I felt like $1 million, I look at this thing and the tent comes up to there, and I couldn't have sung like that. So I had to stand outside in the rain while all the musicians were nicely warm and undercover. And what was so good is this gold and rainbow coloured sari did not show any raindrops at all, because it was such a kind of, I don't know if any of you have seen it on any of the videos, but it's pretty spectacular thing. And it weighs about 30 kilos. Gosh, it's so heavy. I don't know when I can ever wear it again. I think it was a one-off thing. But what was bizarre is when I was actually singing, because one is also barefooted, all the guys are playing way behind me. And at one point, I looked down, and typically Indian, there's about 30 electrical wires going all over the place, and I'm there in the rain, barefooted, standing on these wires. And I'm thinking, oh, Lord, if I have to die, in other words, if I have to fry in front of you, then let it please be here. But for some reason, he kept me alive. I'm not quite certain why. And there's another funny ending to this, actually, because the evening of the 80th went on and on and on. And for days, it was just meant to be myself and Parveen Sultana doing a sort of ladies singing for Swami. But the organization were being bombarded with people saying, please, can we sing for the 80th? And suddenly there was El Subramaniam, and there was this, that. And there was loads of people, and they were all told to perform only 10 minutes. And typically, Indian stretchable time, oh, hush my mouth, but somebody like Parveen Sultana went on for 40 minutes, and they got longer and longer, so that I was put on at the very end. And suddenly, before I actually went on, and by this time everyone was cold and it was pretty miserable, suddenly the curtain comes down at the Shanti Vedika where Swami is, and I'm thinking, oh my God, he's going to cut me. I'm going to be cut. And I'm really feeling pretty terrible about this, because but you know, one learns to accept this. And Swami, in his infinite grace and compassion, suddenly I saw a little man appearing from the behind areas, running across through the crowd, and they're running up the stairs saying, Swami has said, do not worry, madam, you will be singing, you just have to wait a few moments. And then he ran off again. And I consider this incredible that Swami should think of me at this moment. I don't know what Swami was doing, but the curtain eventually came up again, and then I was able to go out and sing. And at the very end, by the way, while I was singing, normally I like to give him some rose petals. I'm going to talk about the rose petals in a little while. But because he was over in the Shanti Vedika, there's no way you could offer him anything. So I'd done my thing, and we were told, if you all line up, the artists are going to be taken to see Swami. So we all lined up. And, you know, being British, we don't, if you're in a line, you don't break rank or file. You walk politely and correctly. The moment we got to where the stairs led up to where Swami was sitting, suddenly everyone rushed forward and get out of my way and pushing, because there's a terrible bottleneck which you can only go up more or less single file in the steps to get onto the Shanti Vedika where he was. So I was quite surprised about this, because I'm not used to people what I call disobeying. But obviously, you know, it's out of love. They all want to see him. And people were worried that he would be going and there wasn't much time. Anyway, suddenly I found myself in this terrible bottleneck and being sort of almost squashed, lifted almost up the stairs. And there was almost a rush to get past Swami, and he'd been there for hours. I felt so sorry for him. And I was thinking, what am I going to do? I had in my hand my rose petals that I wanted to give him. And I got just in front of him, and he looked at me, and he just lifted up his dress a little bit. I put the rose petals on his feet, and then he put the dress down again, covered his feet up, and then I went. So that was my thing. He'd answered my prayer as to how on earth was I going to, you know, present him with these rose petals. And, well, maybe as we're on the subject of rose petals, I know what I'm going to do next. Because I'd always seen people offering a rose to Swami, I know how important it is, but Swami likes us to be elegant, graceful, and because of my bad leg, I can't get down on my knees, and if I did, I'd be stuck there and would never get up again, and I would just look like a large heifer lump trying to get there. So I knew that that was not on, and this is how I devised the plan many years earlier when I was singing for him, to do this thing with rose petals. And so I used to, even when he would be sitting in the Purnachandra Hall, I obviously couldn't go down among the men, heaven forfend. So, you know, you can't go among the men. So I used to stand at the edge and just shower these rose petals all over him. And that brings me to the next song, because even the word shower the rose petals should be a bit of a clue. Because over there sits Geeta, lovely Geeta. And this song she wrote when I was last here, what was it, 11 years ago, doing the same kind of thing here. One evening, Geeta and I were on the top floor. Was it at your son's place? I can't remember. Yeah, it was. And she'd got out her harmonium and was singing something. And I heard her sing this song. And because of this thing that I can't actually offer a proper flower, I have to get round it by giving it in rose petals. When she sang this song, the hairs on the song that she'd written, the song that I wish I'd written, actually, the hairs on my arms kind of started tingling, and that little tickle in my heart told me that I must do something with this song. So she kindly put it on a cassette, which I took back to England, and then recorded. So I'd like to do Shower the Rose Petals for you. I usually keep it to the end, but somehow conversation has led me into the direction of this song now. At the end of the song, you will notice that the backing tracks, this is the problem of performing with a backing track, the singers, which is sometimes me singing my own backing tracks if I can't find any singers to volunteer, it's in the days when we were all singing Loka Samasta, and instead of Samasta Loka. So now I sing the new way while the backing singers sing the old way. So it's not a mistake, it's just it was recorded then. And to this day, you know, I said yesterday the one song they usually ask me to sing is Move Your Body Close to Me, and the other one is always Shower the Rose Petals. And I'm just so pleased, Geeta, that you're here, that you wrote this song and that I got a chance to sing. I'm humbled, actually, because this is actually a bhajan, because it does have the call and response thing, but it's the only thing that comes close to an English bhajan that I sing, because I don't actually do English bhajans. I prefer them in their, what I call, the original form. But this is the closest I go. And I love this song to death. It's a fabulous song. Let's just do it.
Shower the rose petals, shower the rose petals, shower the rose petals, shower the rose petals. Lord of the universe is walking towards us. Lord of the universe is walking towards us. Shower the rose petals. 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 Lovely fragrance from the roses. Lovely fragrance from the roses. Lovely fragrance is Baba's vibhuti. Lovely fragrance is Baba's vibhuti. I am in heaven. Shower the rose petals. I am in heaven. Shower the rose petals. Petals. Fill your heart with love. Shower the rose petals. See the rainbow in the sky. See the rainbow in the sky. Baba walking softly by. Baba walking softly by. Loving everyone. Shower the rose petals. Loving everyone. Shower the rose petals. Shower the rose petals. Shower the rose petals. Sukino Bhavantu Samasta Sukha Sukino Bhavantu Samasta Loka Sukino Bhavantu.
Thank you, Geeta. Do you know what Geeta gave me, maybe unknowingly, I don't know, is probably one of the greatest gifts that a musician can give to another musician, which is a song that you actually love to sing. And, you know, I've sung it many, many times, and I still love that song to bits. It's so good. I've never heard it sung, though, as a bhajan, which you probably know how to do. I've always sung it with this backing track, but I think it's extremely suitable if one is going to sing in English, because the words are so good. You know, yesterday I'd asked people if they had any questions for me, and quite a few people actually put their, saw me afterwards and said, oh, I got a question for you. I said, no, don't ask me now, ask me in here. So you have one. Oh, no, you asked me. Oh, don't. I don't think I've got the backing track for it, so I can't. I might be able to do it later. Not, but I. The trouble is, I've just been with the kids over there. Some young bright spark said to me, how many budgeons do you know? And I said... Which is awful, because I know everyone knows more budgeons than me. I mean, I shouldn't really be up here singing budgeons at all. But I can't really tell you how many I've got in my head. Not that many, I'm ashamed to say, because I've recorded now, 9 budgeon CDs. But once I've done the CD, I've kind of moved on to another thing, or I'm out on tour, and I don't always keep these budgeons in my head. Sometimes I choose them, and they only really work in the studios, because at least in a studio, if you make a mistake, you can stop the... I was going to say the tape. Already that dates me, because it's now all computerized, but you can stop the machinery and get it right, or you can add other singers. You can do all sorts of tricks with it, actually. And Swami has always said... much better to sing your bhajans, not with that book in front of you. And I'm sure a lot of you bhajan singers like to have the book there. I like it there just as a kind of safety net in case I'm going to get a blank spot, which can happen. But I often then don't look at it. But some of them, if I make a mistake and it's in front of a side crowd, I can't get out of it. If I'm singing in front of people that don't know, then they won't know. But in front of you lot, I think I'd be quite wary about singing certain bhajans. But Sai Avatara was the first one I ever sang. And I actually sung it in a retreat. I'd only been to Swami, this must be about 30 years ago, and I'd heard that Phyllis Crystal was giving a retreat in Switzerland. And I'd never sung a bhajan out loud. And there were about 100 of us at this retreat in a converted monastery. And we were in a big hall. And she had lots of pictures of Swami on the wall. And there was just one door to get into this hall. And have any of you been to any of Phyllis Crystal's seminars or talks? Yeah, a couple of hands have gone up. She does a good thing. She asks us to imagine that we have a maypole, if you don't know what that is. It's that stick that goes up with lots of ribbons coming off. It's usually a huge thing, and people pull a ribbon and they dance around it. So she has a small version of this with lots of different coloured ribbons to symbolically for us to imagine that this is a bit like life. We have to imagine that at the top of the point sits our Lord, and then each of us in our mind has to pull a coloured ribbon. We can imagine whichever colour we'd like. I always choose purple because it's my colour. And then we would... So she had this thing as a small thing, because this took place in Switzerland, and the Swiss and the Germans had no idea what a maypole was, so this made it easier for them. We're all sitting in this room meditating on Swami, and suddenly I had my eyes closed, and somebody was saying... I heard people go like this, and we looked, and actually dripping down the ribbons was Amrit, and dripping all the way onto the floor. And at first, I hadn't seen what was dripping. In fact, I was sitting here thinking, oh, gosh, I've got a bottle of jasmine oil in my bag. Could it have fallen over or something? Am I some guilty party? But then they got a big silver plate, which they put under this maypole, and it kept dripping. We watched it dripping, and everyone was going, yummy. And then of all the pictures around the edge... Of 30 pictures, let's say 27 had Vibhuti dripping from it, and she had a picture of Swami on her desk, and there was on Swami's face, it was all bubbling up with Amrit. Anyway, I'm telling you that because then they had a point where everyone got to sing bhajans, and I had to brace myself to burst into my first ever bhajan. And you never forget your first bhajan that you ever learn and sing live, and that was Sai Avatara. I might think about it. I'll have a little thing if I can get it together in my head later. But I have, as I said, I haven't got it on backing track. I've got all these albums and all the backing tracks, but I don't bring them with me, and I certainly don't remember them all. And I could sing it if I had the book in front of me, but I'm so aware of, you know, Swami doesn't like us to be reading things. That's why I never take notes when I'm coming up to talk, because, first of all, I'd have to look for a pair of glasses to even read my notes, and that looks awful. And I think he wants us to come from the heart. So I'm actually what you'd call a loose cannon. I haven't a clue what's going to come up my mouth next or what I'm going to talk about. And that's why I always quite like doing questions and answers, because you might fire some off-the-wall question. I saw a hand go up. Tell me something. Ask me.
Outside, yesterday we were talking about the phoenix that you got from Swami, and you asked us to ask the question here.
Ha, yeah. The phoenix bird. Well, actually, you couldn't just pass me that purple bag. I think I've got... I want to show you something. You can't see, because this is the newest CD. I actually finished this CD on the day that Swami decided to leave his physical body. And there's a kind of phoenix bird on the front. The reason you mentioned that... Were you there at the concert in December, or how did you know about the phoenix bird? Huh. Well, I was actually sick, as Dr. Hari will know. I spent this last birthday in the super specialty hospital attached to kind of testing tubes to see what was the matter with me. So I didn't actually make it for the birthday. I was only fortunate. I was only in there for 24 hours. And when I came out, the birthday was over and I had to go somewhere. And then I came back to Puttaparthi and Swami called me to the wheelchair and he said, you're singing tomorrow, gulp. So it was too soon to get any of his musicians to come and play with me, so I had my backing tracks. And by now, people are kind of used to seeing backing tracks in Puttaparthi. But as I said yesterday, it used to be a big no-no to sing with backing tracks because it just wasn't done. So I prepared some songs and did my thing. I did six songs. And while I was singing, as I said yesterday, he was sitting about the distance of that monitor there, but I don't like to kind of look because, you know, I'm there to entertain and perform. That's what I've done all my life. My job on this planet, actually, is to make people feel happy, cheer people up, uplift souls, hopefully open a few hearts, and make people smile because it is so important to actually feel good in life. And that's one of the joys about music. It's the great communicator. Anyway, so I'm looking straight out there, aware of him sitting there. But as I said also yesterday, when I'm singing, I'm trying to think, God, has my makeup run? What's the next verse? What am I meant to be doing now? Is my sari in place? Which, again, heavily pinned. I never normally wear a pin, but for a performance, you have to make sure you don't goof up. And as I was sitting there, I was aware that something was kind of brought on and put near his feet, but I didn't like to look and see what it was. And when I'd finished singing, I'd already given him the rose petals before singing, and I go up to him basically to say thank you, how pathetic. I never know what to do. It's always, once I'm singing, I know what I'm doing, but I'm flustered when the music has stopped, especially up there. You're surrounded by the men, which is already a big danger zone. And so I went and said sort of thank you, Swami. And there was this mound under a gold piece of material, and he rather theatrically took it off. And he said, and it underneath is a thing like about this big, the most amazing carved glass phoenix bird I've ever seen, in orange colors, and it was sitting on a little light so that the light shone up through the bird with little pink and purple streaks, all my colors, and I was stunned. It was very beautiful. And he said to me three times very clearly, it's the phoenix bird, it's the phoenix bird, it's the phoenix bird. And I stood back and sort of went like that. I didn't quite know what to say, and I wasn't sure who was meant to be the bird. The bird in English means a woman, so I think he can't be talking about me, and what does it mean? And I've thought about this because the phoenix bird, and actually Isaac Tigret that night, he said to me, well, that evening, he said afterwards, I've never seen Swami give anything like that to anybody. And he immediately got somebody to go in on the internet to see what is the phoenix bird. I mean, we all know that the phoenix bird dies and rises from the ashes, but I hadn't realized how a potent symbol it is for so many religions. For Sufis, it is a symbol of the soul, only they call it the simurgh. So I knew all about that aspect. And it is, I think it meant, the fact that he said it three times, maybe that he's got three incarnations. I mean, I'm only guessing at this. Maybe it was to remind me and to remind us all that when we are no more, it's just the body, and that we rise again from ash and come back again. I'm not sure. Probably when I'm much older, I may really understand the true significance of it. But I was absolutely stunned to see this very, very beautiful thing here. And Swami sort of muttered something about packing it up, but I was again a bit flustered, so I said, sort of, thank you, Swami, and backed away, and I didn't know quite where to sit, so I went and sat down against the wall just outside the interview room, where immediately some frosty old man who was sitting in the veranda said, no, get out of here. We didn't say get out. He sort of went like that to send me back to the ladies' bit, which, of course, I then did. And when I sat down, I realized, my gosh, I've left the phoenix bird behind. How am I going to get it off the stage? So obviously I couldn't do anything about that, so I go back to my room when the concert's over. And I was rather worried because I'd just done a couple of blues songs as well, and it's always I did that song I sang yesterday, Unify. That wasn't the problem, it was just the fact that it was, that normally Swami would talk much more, but you know, he was quite weak. The fact that he even said, it's the phoenix bird, with such strength, when everything else he'd been saying was very weak, so that it was hard, it was difficult to understand him. I didn't know how I was going to get this blasted bird back, and I'm sitting in my room thinking, have I made a most terrible mistake? Are they all hating me because I've sung blues again? And I'm sitting on my own. I've got nobody in the room there to even say, oh, don't worry, it was all okay. And I'm sitting there, and then a knock comes on the door, and it's one of those boys that looks after Swami, and he walks in with a huge box, and he's like this, staggering under it, and inside is this phoenix bird. He puts it down, takes the lid off, and I go, gosh, and he said, and Swami wanted to say he really loved the program that you did. So I was going, thank goodness. But the phoenix bird is a bit of a mystery, but because this new album is the last one. It's the only one that he's never been able to bless because I didn't finish it till he was physically no more. I thought it was nice to put it on the front cover. But what the significance is, really, I don't know. It's kind of up to anyone to think it out for themselves. But we do go back to dust, and we do get born again, and we do go back to dust. It's just a continuation. So I think he was just saying to me how impermanent everything is. We just go back to dust and get born again. If anyone's got a far more intelligent thought about what it could mean, please let me know. Any other questions, by the way, about it? Ah, I can see the man in red. Shout so we can all hear.
Yeah, Sarah.
Sairam. Yesterday you concluded your speech with the statement that everything is in his control, and we should play to his tune. Apart from your music, was there or is there any sadhana, spiritual practice that you do to help you get to that point?
Well, even for me to hear the word sadhana means that it's something sort of planned, or that one deliberately does something. I've got to say I'm probably the worst example for anybody to follow up here. I don't really do anything planned. It's all, for me, sadhana would be just being nice to everyone, being happy with everyone, cheerful, hopefully under the most grim circumstances. And believe me, my kind of lifestyle and traveling, there are times when I'm absolutely exhausted, knackered is the word in English, and really, or somebody could be irritating. For me, sadhana is to be nice and kind, truthful, and being righteous as much as one can in all circumstances. I've got to say, I'm not sitting there doing 1,008 Om Sai Rams every day. I can hardly sit down for very long with my leg anyway. That's not an excuse, but I'd rather be out helping, doing Narayan Seva or something. I like doing things. So I think if we're just good and cheerful and nice and try and just be pleasant to everyone, that is what I call sadhana. I can't think of that works for me, but there must be other things that other people do. I don't know. Who else? Has anyone got any suggestions for the best sadhana? I just know that I have to, I've learnt that the only thing I can really count on is what I hear, is my inner voice. And it took me a long time to think, am I imagining this? Is this me talking to myself? or is it him talking to me? But then, in fact, him is me. So I think one has to, I had to get to this point where I don't think of Swami as my best friend, because a best friend is somebody else. He is not somebody else. It says in the Quran that he is closer than the eyelid touches the eye. He's closer than the jugular vein in our neck. He is within us. And I'm sure you know this thing about the fish, that we are the fish swimming in water, and he is the water that is all around us and within us. So there is no separateness. So I just keep it simple in life, just to try and do good and see good. That is my sadhana. Any other questions? I saw there was a man at the back. Sorry, Will, who put his hand up? A man in black.
Thanks very much, Dana. Your presentation is fantastic. We spoke briefly outside about a question that you wanted me to ask today. As opposed to prior to you coming to Swami, how did you handle, as every one of us goes through difficulties, depressions, problems, challenges, how did you handle your problems prior to coming to Swami, as opposed to after you came to Swami?
God, that's a hell of a loaded question, actually. I don't know if I should be giving away my ghastly, grim, dark secrets up here on stage. Probably nobody would speak to me then. With difficulty, like anybody, I mean, I've walked a really rocky road. It's not that easy being in my business, especially, and I've been in a business where everything is dominated by how you look, which I so hate. And while I'm up here, what we say in English, on my soapbox, I can actually say I really can't understand the obsession, especially in America, where you're judged on how you look. But I was in the film business, and I was permanently being told, you can have this film role, but you've got to lose weight. How dare they? But of course, I then starved myself for weeks. I have had some very, very dark nights of the soul, but I'm no different to any of you. All of us have terrible times. I don't know anybody. You know, it's like that story that Swami used to talk about, the woman who went to Buddha to say, you know, my only child has died, can you help me? And he goes, yes, I can help you, but you've got to go to a family and get me some mustard seeds, somebody who's never, ever known a death in the family. Only these seeds will work. And, of course, she goes to one family and an aunt has died. She goes to the next family and somebody else has died. And she goes all around and she finds that everyone has got somebody who died. So she learnt the lesson. Well, all of us have had dark times. For me, the thing that has always got me out of these, if it wasn't eating or chocolate, which has always helped, but that's being a bit flippant, actually. For me, music has got me out of dark times, because I find music is the great communicator for me personally, and it's uplifted my soul. And if I've been in a terrible situation, I have now learnt that it will change, you know, that thing of pleasure being the interval between two pains. I've written many songs myself about, you know, how the clouds will go and there is still a blue sky behind. So I can't actually say exactly, nor should I, in this position, though must tell you, I am writing my memoirs and I might be a bit more open about it, but I don't think I could give any terrible trade secrets away of what I used to do in my teens and 20s and 30s, because they were pretty crazed. But, you know, we all have dark times, and the one thing I can say I never did was take to drink, because I'm vehemently anti-drink, and I see it destroys families and makes mincemeat out of people. And also it's a depressive, so if anyone has ever had dark times, you will probably know that drink does not help. But now, I still have terrible dark times, and quite often, I mean, I just was on my way to Ukraine 3 weeks ago, and on my way to the airport, I'm thinking, what am I doing? I'm going for 16 days on my own, off to a place, to people I don't really know, in a language I don't speak, then to the medical camp. What the hell am I doing? Swami, why have you got me in this mess? And even I was worried that nobody would be there to meet me at the airport. When I get there, I have 16 days of amazing loving kindness, such amazing Sai love in the Sai family. And every time that I have these doubts, something comes along and Swami makes me go, why on earth did you waste energy thinking negatively? None of us will escape getting through life thinking it's all hunky-dory and marvelous. We're all going to have troubled times. But they're usually because they are attached to our attachments. Either you're worrying about a husband or a son or a child or a dog or whatever, or a work or lack of money. And they're all actually trivialities and things on the peripheral. The only thing that really matters is that we should be tuning our inner radio to the best channel to get the best messages and music in. So I haven't really got a recipe for anybody. I can say try and be cheerful because all things must pass. But we all know that we're going to have hit some bumpy roads. And the worst that can happen is that one knows at the end of all of this, one learns. And we should all be saying, thank you, Lord, for giving us yet one more trial and tribulation because it makes us stronger. But I know I can be standing here thinking, well, I'm feeling okay, my life's going okay, which it doesn't at all, actually, by the way. But it's just something you have to go through, these highs and lows. And I usually write a song about it and then I get it off my chest and carry on. I hope that vaguely answers your question. Probably not. Will it do? Yes, you wanted to finish, say something else. Yeah, no, is that okay? Will that do as an answer? I've got no answers, actually. It took time, I must.